A beacon shining in the night, sometimes obscured by a shadow, reinforced by a wall of ice, always protected by a podcast overlord.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Oh, hello, Arrow Squad. This is The Flash.
And this is The Chameleon.
Oh, wow. How you doing, Cammie? It's been a couple weeks.
It has. We had the longest hiatus ever. It was actually just a week, right? We had 1 week off.
Yeah, but 2 weeks since they've heard from us, so.
That's true. Did you guys miss us?
Was
your week
us.
Lonely without us? Did you need the ultimate hero and villain team in your life, other than Oliver and Prometheus, of course?
we're pretty good stand-ins for those two, I would hope.
Yeah, I feel like I could go toe to toe with Prometheus. Oh. Maybe not after this week, though.
Toe to toe with him? I thought you'd be toe to toe dancing with him. You'd be like, partners in crime.
I mean, that's true, but villains do have to fight each other sometimes, and I feel like if I was going to fight a villain, Prometheus would be on my list to fight.
Cool, cool.
We got some cool Prometheus stuff this week. I'm excited to talk about this week's episode.
We did.
Are you?
Yeah, well, let's do that. This is Season 5, Episode 16, titled Checkmate, and welcome everybody.
Welcome.
All right, well, what did you feel? I mean, I'm looking at our notes here, and this looks like you've given it probably one of the highest ratings I've ever seen you give.
It is. Ever since we've started rating these episodes, the one I gave this week's was the highest. And I don't really have as many caveats as I usually have, because usually if I even broach a high rating, I'm like, but first, let me list all the reasons why it's not a 10. And this week, it's really just, it's pretty straightforward. I gave it a 7.5 out of 10. Which is the highest I've rated it so far. and I think my reasoning is that this week's episode finally gave me a big bad villain that I'm on board with. I have been so skeptical of Prometheus this season. Mm-hmm. And when it was revealed that it was the DA, Adrian Chase, I was even more skeptical, because I just wasn't buying it. But the moments that we got in this week's episode, especially the moment where he killed his wife, I just felt like really sold him as a villain. And it kind of is helping me get into the overall season plot. I will say the week specific plot of saving Susan felt like a huge misstep. That accounts for pretty much all the points keeping this away from 10. Hmm. And I believe I've just heard that might have been originally meant for Thea and was rewritten with the whole difference in Willow's contract to go to Susan. I don't know. But if so, that makes sense to me, because that felt like I really didn't know why we were rooting for that. But the actual Prometheus versus Oliver content was fantastic. That made sense. It felt like Arrow, and I was pretty happy to see it. A good above seven rating for me is hard to come by.
It is.
What did you rate it, and what did you think of it?
Well, I can't disagree with you on a lot of what you said. And I just wanted to point out, Arrow Squad listeners, I'm fighting a really horrible cough this week, so I'm going to do my best to shut my volume off if I feel an attack coming on. So if you notice my voice is a little bit off, that's why. But anyway, I apologize for that. This episode for me, it was tense right from start to finish. So I'm giving it a 9, and I'm calling it Lines of Foresight, because, man, there are some scenes, the flashbacks all tied in to our present day, just with what the Anatoly and all the guys were saying. I just found that hilarious. So we'll get into that a little bit later. But like I said, tense episode from start to finish. Very polished. Yeah. Only a few hiccups of kind of like dope moments, but I didn't think they were enough to deter from how great this story flowed. As you were saying, we got to see just how evil Chase/Prometheus is. This whole plot line with him has really grounded Arrow back to its street level hero roots that we love so much about season 1 and season 2. I mean, it's a personal story. It's a personal challenge. It's not a world-ending event that Arrow has to deal with. And it allows us to connect to it at a deeper, more engaged level as viewers. So I just want to say thank you to the Arrow writers, because I find we are more personally engaged and attached to this season's storyline because of the type of villain we're getting, which is why I agree with you on all that stuff that you said.
Yeah, it's a situation where I don't want to have to point out flaws in order to point out how good this episode was, but it really is coming off of, you know, a few episodes this season in the past where we haven't necessarily been sold on who the big bad villain was, and the overall villain plot line didn't feel coherent, that this episode comes with a sense of clarity and a nod to that Arrow DNA, as you're pointing out. And that was nice to see. It sort of left me hopeful that whatever this is building towards for the end of the season and for the end of the 5-season arc will be really engaging and fun. I hope. It gave me a couple options for favorite moment. Do you want to go first on favorite moment of this episode?
I can, sure.
There
really wasn't one big wow moment that stood out for me, as the whole episode I thought was fantastic. So I picked out two scenes that I just really loved.
Okay, and what were those scenes?
Well, okay, so scene number one, I'm going to go back to that hospital sequence when Oliver went running in to check on Pike and Chase was already there. So it was that whole scene in the hospital room standing over Pike's unconscious body with Oliver and Chase. And the big moment was when Chase started bringing up all the people that have died. You can see, you're able to see a few emotional reactions in Oliver's facial expression. So real props to Stephen Amell, because I think he did a fantastic job this episode. But the emotions that I saw, I first saw surprise that Chase knows that much about Oliver's history and everything that happened. But then at the same time, you also see hurt from the instant reminder of how much he's lost over the last few years. So that the fact that Stephen Amell conveyed those two emotions, it was just a fantastic scene, and it was really driving home that point of this is the hero versus the villain, and the villain is really, really trying to stick a stake in his heart and twist it.
Yeah.
So that was one scene.
Yeah, it was a good moment. Mm-hmm. I think with the whole, again, that came down to big context, like season context versus individual episode context. I think in the big context of the whole season, it was a really great opportunity for them to reveal the sort of mental battle that Prometheus was playing there and how much he really had gotten into Oliver's psyche. In terms of the individual episode, with that specific moment where we're supposed to be caring about, you know, Pike and Susan and those who were at risk in this episode, it didn't really seem to pin to that. It seemed to be mostly relevant in the big context of the whole season.
Right. Exactly. So the second scene that I really just, it just tickled my fancy, was that scene with Oliver and Mr. Terrific when they were entering the building looking for Susan. We haven't really had a scene yet with Oliver and Mr. Terrific in costume form. I don't recall them ever being out on the streets together, just the two of them. So for me, that was a really great comic book moment come to life. It just looked cool, the two of them, you know, sneaking down the hallway looking for Susan. It was great. And then when Mr. Terrific takes out the T-spheres, that was just icing on the cake moment.
I thought that was pretty cool, too. I thought that they really took some time to give a moment to each character in some of the action sequences. I have my pros and cons with that, but what you have pointed out are definitely the pros.
Well, there you go. That's my two favorite scenes. Okay. Well, how about you? You said you had a couple things you could pull from for a favorite moment.
Yeah. So it would be a bit too morbid to pick Prometheus killing his wife as my favorite moment.
Oh, come on, villainous. Come on.
That's such a dark moment, of course. So I will pick what was the B storyline for this episode, which was Felicity joining Helix. I was pretty cautious or worried, I guess I should say, about her joining Helix and where that was going to go starting this episode, because I was worried that she'd be shown as oblivious to sort of their darkness and deceit and where they could go. But she seems to be pretty well aware, and it's good to see her weigh her options sort of as she goes and take these calculated risks and sort of be aware that she's in a lion's den, if you will. I know it's a scary thing to toy with that she's doing, and she's gotten lots of like moral cautions along the way, but this really suits Arrow's dark, morally gray DNA really well, in my opinion, and it keeps the show so smart and modern to have this type of fighting, to have this sort of like hacktivism and information sharing, and have that be so critical to saving Hero, as is upcoming in the next episode, or finding people, as we saw in this episode, or taking down people, as we saw in previous episodes. And anything that can ground an otherwise fantasy-esque show is really useful as a plot line. And I think that's what this storyline is doing it. And it's helping give the superheroes the power to do sort of these fantastic superhuman things, to have that knowledge. I don't know. It was really cool to see how that sort of set the tone for this episode.
Huh. Okay. I think we'll talk about that a little bit later. I have different feelings on the Felicity storyline this episode. But I'm glad that you found something in that you really could attach to and enjoy.
I loved it. But I love the morally gray storyline. So.
Cool. Well, before we dive right into the episode, we got yet again another really, really long blog post from our friend Erin.
I love these.
Oh, man. Well, she right off the bat, she's saying, so you like long blog posts, eh? And sure enough, she delivered again.
Yes.
So you want to point out a few of the things that she had to say? Because some of the stuff was pretty fun.
Yes. There were a lot of great points in this blog post. She was saying, yay for more Lila. And hopefully we can get baby Sarah back once Flash sorts out its whole Flashpoint deal. And speaking of other shows, she pointed out Katrina Law would be great to see on Legends as an older Nyssa.
Yes.
She comments, and again, she was commenting about the previous episode, but on the mental game that Adrian is playing with Oliver, and she thinks that that's sort of an interesting aspect to Prometheus. It's kind of nice and surprising and cool. And as for Vigilante, she points out, not only do we not have an idea, we also won't know about him until possibly next season as to who he is. So that can kind of get possibly backburnered. And she was saying Thea's stuff from last week was really interesting and sad, especially if you consider, you know, Oliver's killed a guy for seeing his face and all of that, and Thea kind of got fired for, or got Susan fired, and it feels like so much less, and yet it was so heavy on Thea. I don't know, there was a lot of sympathy going on there, and I definitely sympathize as well. She says Felicity and Helix could be pretty interesting, and she thinks that they went pretty heavy-handed with the creepy Adrian at the end of last week's episode, but she feels like they're going the typical kidnap the girl plot with Susan, which may feel like a waste. So that kind of led us up to this episode, which we're now about to discuss, which incidentally did have the typical kidnap the girl plot, but thankfully there were lots of high points other than that.
Well, we knew that was coming just based on how last episode ended, so
right.
But thank you, Erin, for all those wonderful thoughts. There's a lot more in there than what we just covered, but yeah, definitely. We enjoy reading through all that stuff, and it's kind of like you're almost a guest host with how much you're having to say. So maybe we'll have to have you come on one time.
We love everybody's feedback. You guys can send us feedback throughout the week, you know, about these podcasts, about the episode after airs, of course, through the regular feedback form on the website. You know, send us stuff on social media. We are all for it. We totally, love hearing your thoughts.
Totally, totally.
You can disagree with us if you want.
We'll be okay with that.
Yes. So tonight, Prometheus. Yes. Talk to me about it.
Well, we got a lot of Prometheus. Like we got, I think, a lot about him and his intentions and who he is. The kind of stuff we've been waiting for to find out all season long.
I've definitely been waiting for an episode like this for quite a while. Mm-hmm. For Prometheus, you know, we've been sort of along for Oliver's journey this whole time, and the last villain, you know, the last big bad that he will face in the big 5-year arc is pretty critical. And, you know, I've been pretty critical of Prometheus thus far. So it was really good to see an episode that focused on making sure we understood just how vicious, I suppose, he is, before they really get too far into what his goals are with Oliver. Because I think we leave this episode not necessarily knowing what he wants of Oliver.
Not quite, no. And I
mean,
we
do learn more about him as a villain.
We do. And he gives us so much, like, he's a villain that we can believe and hate at the same time. Like, it's not a love to hate relationship anymore. Like, it for me, this episode turned him so quickly, because all season long I've been like saying, I like this Chase character. He's so loyal to Oliver. He's such a good friend. And now he's turned into this. And God, I hate that guy. Man, I want Oliver to beat him down. And
it's a wild, like, trip the other direction.
Yeah, which makes it great. It makes it very personal, like I was saying in the beginning, because we're very attached to Oliver. Because it's personal for him, which makes it personal for us. Right. And that's just so much better than what we've gotten in the last two seasons. So this villain has suddenly turned into so much more than we got with Damian Dark. And, you know, I'm enjoying it, really enjoying it.
It does feel like there's a level of wanting to make this be a personal sort of in Oliver's head sort of foe. In previous seasons, I think we've seen villains get personal in that they've attacked, you know, obviously people close to Oliver. And also it seems to always be a focus on attacking the city. And at this point, it seems to be somebody who's coming in trying to drive a wedge between Oliver and the city, not so much just attack the city, although I'm sure that will come into play. But it is sort of a mental game at this point where we don't necessarily know what Prometheus wants to do, but we know that he's willing to do wild things to accomplish it, like killing his own wife. That was pretty unexpected.
That was that was a level of evil that we haven't seen for a little while. I mean, that not since Slade Wilson. That's what I'm thinking. There's a lot going on here that there it's shades of season two and what kind of a villain we have here.
Yeah. Do you have any sort of wild theories about what his ultimate thing is that he's trying to get Oliver to do, or any theories about why Talia is using him specifically? What's going on there?
Well, I still think he wants Oliver to learn something. I mean, he even said it in this episode that he wants to show Oliver who he really is, because Oliver already showed him, without him even knowing, he showed Chase who he really is, apparently.
Right.
So I'm just wondering what he sees. There's something that he knows that he wants to take Oliver back to a time when Oliver was different, not the person he is now. He wants to bring him back to darker days. And I think that's the part we're missing, is we don't know why that is yet. But I'm wondering that, with the way you asked me, I'm wondering if it is just Chase that's behind all of this. I'm starting to think, is Talia pulling the strings? Because she trained both of them. So I'm wondering if she had anything to do with leading Chase down this path in the way she trained him. Like, if she did some kind of training brainwash or whatever.
It's possible. We've definitely seen that training technique used before by Merlin.
Right. And so you listen to what she said this episode, though. Like, she got very angry with Oliver. We've only seen her in flashbacks where she's there to help him and help him become who he needs to be, to help his city and all that stuff. And then this episode, it was complete yin-yang, night and day difference, where she's like, you killed my father. I never told you what my last name was, by the way. I'm a you know, Ra's al Ghul's daughter. So she's right. Also on some kind of revenge plot here. And I think this is a theory, because you asked me, what do I think? I think she might be using Adrian Chase or Prometheus as a tool to get revenge on Oliver. Because we were wondering, how does Adrian or how does Prometheus know all of this stuff about Oliver? Where is he getting this information from? Well, it's Talia. Talia knows Oliver's entire history and past and everything, and she is feeding all that info to Prometheus.
Right.
So this is what's... It's making me wonder if she's pulling the strings. And we might find that out at the very end.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about Talia being an adversary involved in this is that it sort of becomes a setup of, I brought you into this world and I can take you back out of it. Where she sort of brought the hood, the arrow, into play here. She was pretty critical in him taking all of these skills that he learned in the past 5 years and conglomerating them together into this, you know, sort of eventually hero persona of the hood, the arrow. Mm-hmm. And now she's kind of come to collect. And it does become then also a battle of revenge, because she's trying to honor her father and he's trying to honor his father. And right. I think what will become the critical sort of ideological difference between them, aside from, you know, who's good and who's bad, is that I'm guessing, based on what they've set up this season in terms of Oliver's understanding of legacy, is that it will become a matter of, she is only here to sort of avenge her father, and his mission has become more than that. He started his mission just to avenge his father and, you know, go after the names in the book, and now he, you know, he has more to what he stands for as a hero, or, you know, we kind of hope so, with all of the people that he's added to his team and the what he's gone through, and, you know, now wanting to also protect his city, and now he also sort of stands for different things. And I think that is what will push him more into the hero category, whereas she will either sort of stay as this, you know, ambiguous villain, or become full-on villain, or, you know, that's where I think that divide will be, because at this point I think he's still trying to figure out whether he truly is in the hero category.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
speaking of Talia.
I mean, that just has me thinking. I'm just listening to you and remembering what I said, and I'm just, yeah, I'm really trying to piece it all together. So there is a few pieces to this puzzle that I don't think have been revealed yet, so.
Oh, for sure. We've still got a couple more to go. That was, I think, one of the questions that kept coming up for me when I was thinking about the flashbacks, which is what I wanted to ask you about next. When we're looking at the flashbacks, we're definitely seeing Oliver kind of become closer to what he was in terms of fighting form and style and everything as a person, to what he was when we meet him at the beginning of season one. And I'm kind of curious, what do you still want to see? What pieces still need to be revealed in the flashbacks before we bring it back around to present day?
Before the
we've only got a few.
Before they actually connect the flashbacks till now?
Yeah, because the flashbacks are going to lead up to season one, episode one. It'll leave him at that point. What still needs to happen for you?
Well,
what are you seeing in the flashbacks that's leading you to that point?
It's a good question, because the flashbacks this episode I thought were pretty fun, actually. They were pretty great. I just thought there was so much foresight in them. I mean, the things that Anatoly kept saying tied directly into present day. Like, he just kept saying so many things that we had already witnessed in present day, and it was like Anatoly had so much insight to the future that I didn't even realize he was saying. So I thought there's some really really strong connection, and some of the lines were funny too. He had that line in there about you can't just take something and call it a bat.
Anatoly has been a good flashback character, and obviously we've seen him present day as well, but he's been a great addition.
For what's missing, no, I totally agree with you. He's been a great addition. He's actually my favorite character out of the flashbacks. I do want to see Dolph Lundgren come back, so hopefully he's still kicking around. But I, you know, what's missing, I still think the flashbacks are a whole separate story that are, it's still developing like our present day story. So I don't know what's, I don't really know what's missing. I'm just along for the journey on this one. I'm not even really thinking, you know, what's coming or what are they not telling us? It's, I'm actually just enjoying the flashbacks this time around. And I kind of want to see, I think I want to see where Oliver and Anatoly's relationship ends. Like where, when it comes to tying in season one to the flashbacks, I want to see where their relationship ends off at is kind of, I guess the one thing I'm curious about.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think what I'm still wanting out of the flashbacks is maybe an understanding of what Oliver thought was heroism at that point, and maybe that can contrast to what he sees as heroism present day.
Okay.
And then maybe also just what was the turning point that brought him back? Because there's been obviously several moments throughout these flashbacks where if he was still desperately trying to return to Star City, Starling City, whichever, or contact people there, he kind of could have. And it feels like his mission became fairly quickly more than that, more than just return home. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of curious to see what they use as the final bit that gets him A, back to the island, and B, back home.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. What finally is the deciding factor for him? Like, I got to get back to the city now. It's time.
Yeah, I'm guessing that will be the deciding factor that convinces him. It will parallel the deciding factor that convinces him present day that he is, in fact, a hero and not just, you know, out to avenge his father like pretty much everybody else on the show is right now.
Yeah, well, it's like that was his original desire was to get home, and he just seems to be getting taken on these side, I don't know if you want to call them adventures, but these side missions where he's just feeling obligated to do this and obligated to do that. And then of course there's been some entrapment as well where he's been forced to do things. So I think the underlying feeling is he always does want to get home, but he's either trapped or he's obligated in these other stories that we've seen. So he hasn't been able to yet. So maybe it's just a matter of him finishing everything that he is obligated or trapped in doing. Once he finishes that, then he'll feel like he can go home.
It became less immediate, but it has, I guess, there has always been a sense of him trying to finish something in the flashbacks. Mm-hmm. Has there been still a sense present day of him trying to finish a mission to honor his father, do you feel? Or do you feel like that kind of got left in season one? Do you feel like there is still something present day that he's trying to accomplish?
Present day? I don't know. I think that may have gotten left behind in season one. But now that you bring that up, I mean, I think that maybe is another item that we need to see in the flashbacks, is what drives him to get home, to want to do what his father asked him. Because we haven't even seen that in the flashbacks for quite a while as well. So something has to bring him back to that.
Yeah. I don't know. That I think is, it's the ends all tying together that are keeping, that's what's keeping me tied into the flashbacks, and also to an extent tied into present day. I'm kind of wondering where, in the flashbacks, just Oliver, in the present day, Oliver, as well as Diggle, Felicity, and several other characters, I'm wondering where this whole 5-year arc will leave them.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Well, speaking of some other characters, you want to chat about some of the other arcs?
Sure. Well, you've got a little bit of Felicity here you wanted to dive into a little bit more. So I'm gonna let you be the highlight for this one, because for me, I'll just put it this way. The story arc for Felicity got annoying fast in this episode for me. It's just something about the way she's behaving is kind of bugging me. And I hate to say that because I love Felicity, but I just find she's looking kind of, I don't know, stupid, kind of dumb or clueless, I guess is a better way to put it. I mean, what happened to the maestro of hacking that we know she is in the Arrow Cave? I mean, it just made her look weak. To every time something came up, she's like, oh, I better go check with my new friends. And she'd leave the Arrow Cave just to go use their equipment and ask them questions or whatever. It just took something away from the awesomeness that Felicity is as our Arrow Cave hacker. The fact that she was, it bugged me. It really bothered me. And then with her covering it up and being like, anytime any of the team was questioning her, she'd start stuttering and, you know, being all like foot in her mouth, and not the funny foot in her mouth that we love about her, the really annoying foot in her mouth. Like it just got very frustrating. So I have not enjoyed this story arc the way they presented it this episode. I thought it was going to be cool with what we saw leading up to it, but I don't know, for me, just, ugh. I like Felicity too much. I don't like seeing her be stuttery and kind of clueless and not the power hacker that we know her to be. So I'm going to leave it at that. That's my rant. Let's hear you turn it around, why you love it so much.
Okay. So I definitely am willing to be pretty critical of the way they will sometimes write Felicity. I think one of the big things that has been a problem this season and in a lot of the previous seasons with how they've written her is that they will dumb down her character in order to bring in something new, like a skill that she can do perfectly well. They'll sort of eliminate so that another character can shine. I think, frankly, they did that with the introduction of Curtis, and they've done that with the introduction of a couple other heroes and heroines introduced to the team. However, for this, for the Helix bit, it makes sense because there is actually a distinction between what she's accessing through them and what she already had access to herself, and it gives her a moral conflict. While Felicity is, of course, like a great master hacker and tech person, she isn't essentially like Pandora's box god. It's not like she has everything. And so again, when it comes to keeping the story realistic and grounded in some sense of reality, it does make sense that there would be other people out there with similar skills who could come together and who could have more than her. Okay. And I like that. I'm first in line to say Felicity's a goddess and has everything and can do everything, but I appreciate that sort of grounded nature of it. And it gives her a conflict where she's having to work with other people who aren't just other heroes out in the field who do something completely different from her, who, you know, she can be the voice in their ear telling them what to do. But here she's having to work with somebody who's a little bit more of a peer in her field, but may have a moral difference, similar to how Oliver's had to go up against people who were peers in his field but had moral differences, like the villains and anti-heroes he's worked with, Diggle when he went up against Hive, or against like the corrupt military things. We want to see the heroes also be able to go up against corrupt versions of themselves, and that's one of the things that's made the Prometheus thing interesting against Oliver or Hive when that went on with Diggle. And so this is Felicity's chance at that. We got like a one episode taste of that when she went up against Calculator, but this is a little bit different. And this is also a little bit more grounded. And I was worried, and I'm still a little worried, just less so after this week's episode, that she would be written as sort of just doing whatever they said. But we are actually getting to see her consider these choices, and everything she's doing is making sense insofar as what she's gaining from them. Now, there will, I assume, and I've heard, come a point where she's going to be asked to do things that she is going to actively not be able to do or not be able to morally do. But so far, her decisions, what she gives them versus the payoff of what she gets, is making sense. And as one of the other reviews that I read of yesterday's episode pointed out, she was one of the only people on the team who, outside of any direct confrontation, was getting anything done, despite her missing one of the, you know, conflicts in like the first 20 minutes of the episode. So she is still useful, and that's important to me. I don't like her being kept away from the team. That's historically been one of my biggest gripes. But with this, I understand, because it is currently the B storyline, that she is going to have, you know, sort of another set of people that she's working with. And that makes sense to me. But it's felt so Arrow, her storyline and her conflict, that I've just really enjoyed that. And I like the techie aspect of it. I like the impending moral conflict with Helix. I know it's frustrating because it's a moral conflict, but I like that. That's what the show needs to get into.
Okay.
Have I swayed you at all or no?
Well, you've swayed me on a few points, and you did bring something up that there is some concern for Felicity that she is going to be getting in too deep by continually asking them for favors to help her. They're going to keep asking her for, equal favor back, and right. We didn't see what this last big one was that she's gonna have to do, so she might get herself into some moral dilemmas where they're like, well, you used us for this, so now we need you to do this, and right. She's gonna have a struggle with it. So yeah, I am concerned with her for those aspects. And I mean, you're right,
somebody had to save Susan. So I don't care about Susan, but I recognize somebody had to save her. Somebody's gonna have to find Oliver. And yeah. Nobody else is doing it. And we've certainly seen, like, Diggle, for example, is a very good example. We've certainly seen Diggle have to do extremely morally questionable things, like kill mm-hmm. his own brother or work with really corrupt people. We've seen Oliver bring Malcolm Merlyn on as a partner to the team after Malcolm nearly destroyed his last remaining family member and got half the city killed. You know, we've seen members of this team work with really questionable people before. Helix, as much as I see them as a good questionable foe/conflict for Felicity, they're certainly not the darkest one we've seen this far. And her decisions are far from being the like most morally questionable we've seen so far. I think it's a good opponent. It's just certainly not like the darkest or most frustrating decision this team has made.
Yeah, no, I can see what you're saying there. I think maybe if I try to reword what I said earlier, I think it's when they're in the Arrow Cave and they're like, we need to help find Susan. She doesn't even try. She's like, oh, okay, I can go do that. And she immediately runs to Helix. And then later in the episode, we need to find Oliver. Where's Oliver? Oh, I know someone who can help me with that. And she doesn't even try in her own state because she's been so good at finding people and finding objects and places or whatever before. If there was a transition where she was at her own station and she's getting frustrated with herself, I can't do it, I need more resources, then she leaves for Helix, I think it maybe would have been less frustrating for me. And
I think they weren't trying to show her hitting a wall. They weren't trying to show her being unable to do it. They were trying to show that she knew where the resources were. She knew where the information was. It just mm-hmm. was already there at Helix. And it is also sort of a plot-driven thing, which is frustrating to see on the show just in general a lot of times. Certain, like, abilities or inabilities, like, jumping forward a little bit, like we saw with Curtis's T-balls, T-spheres, whatever, saving Dinah and the rest of the team later on. That sort of was just like a plot thing where it's like they could have saved themselves, like with Dinah's supersonic scream, she could have broken down the walls, but we had to see Curtis's T-spheres in action. So it's like, okay, you know, and we know that Felicity, in theory, in this fantasy world, probably you know, if Helix wasn't a storyline, could have hacked into something or found something. But in this storyline, she knew where the information was, and they needed a scene transition from Arrow set to Helix set. So that's what the scene transition will always look like. It's always going to look like a 5-second walk to the elevator. Okay, we're transitioning sets. It's TV world, and they have 50 minutes. I would be totally here for seeing Felicity try to hack it on her own and identify the specific information she needs, and then there's a call and it's funny, and then she goes over. But we just frankly don't have time, as much as I would watch that alongside you as well. So I think that's why that transition occurred.
Well, all right, let's move off of Felicity for now, because you started to dive into something else that we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, those T-spheres bothered you too, right? Yeah, get your gripes out on that, because I'm so with you on that.
I mean, well, they were cool, because like I said, I loved the scene when he first pulled them out with Oliver there. But yeah, no, that if I had to do a nitpick like me and Jess do over on Tomorrow's Legends, if I had to do a nitpick, this would be it. Because yeah, Wild Dog and Dinah get trapped, but she could have easily used her canary cry to get out of there. I mean, it's just drywall or concrete. She could easily have busted through there. So I found that, I was like, oh, come on, guys. Like, for her to just sit down on the ground and, oh, we're trapped, it was, yeah. I mean, we didn't even see her use her scream this episode, so.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was, I mean, it was still cool to see the T-spheres and do their thing, just to show that they're kind of pretty badass. Still,
I like Curtis's tech. Don't get me wrong. I think it's cool. I'm not madly in love with any of the newbies, quite frankly. But I feel like the T-spheres thing, A, gets Curtis away from the whole, like, physically fighting in the field and, you know, getting his butt kicked thing. And it's also, it just fits the Arrow world, where it's kind of, it's just right on that edge of like fantasy superhero stuff without being like, you know, talking sharks or time traveling spaceships or anything that is more fitting the other shows that we already have, which are great too. But Arrow is just, it's a different sort of show. So I like them. It's just, maybe they could have found a more organic way to work them into this episode.
Yeah, but he fits in, though. I don't think it's, I mean, if you look at Oliver's tech with all the different trick arrows that he has, he's got a lot of tech, too. So I think Curtis's T-spheres are not a stretch too far away at all. I think it fits in just perfectly, actually.
Yep, I agree. With the others, now I know that most of them took a bit of a back seat this episode. Mm-hmm. Were there any other standout performances with the other Team Arrow characters? My standout pick is Diggle in the field working with Oliver in a couple search and attack scenes. I thought that was so cool. I love getting to see him like as Spartan in the field with Oliver. It's a cool, always a cool moment. Seems a bit rare these days. So
yeah, well, they're nice. They're slowly working our originals, our veterans, back in together. I mean, it was great to see Diggle back out there, and him and Oliver work so well together. And I mean, Oliver just calls a quick action, and you know, Diggle knows exactly what he needs to do. There's no questioning it. They just have that history together, and they're definitely a great duo out in the field. So yeah, it's always fun to see them. See them out there working the streets together, I guess is a good way to put it.
Yep. That was my favorite moment. What about Wild Dog and Lance? Do you like that team up?
Oh yeah. Well, we've been enjoying them together for sure. So it was cool to see them have a few more office scenes together. I kind of like that Prometheus had a scene with almost everybody in this. So every time Lance had to face him down was really, really cool too.
Yeah. What did you think of Wild Dog claiming that he would be the one to kill Prometheus?
I just think it's trash talk. I mean, that's Wild Dog. He trash talks everybody and everything whenever he can. So I wouldn't put too much weight behind that or any theories or premonitions about it. I just think it's trash talk. It's just Wild Dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Do you get a different feeling about it or something?
I don't know. I mean, am not coming at this from the position of really being a Wild Dog fan. I've been much less of a Wild Dog fan in the past, and I'm very slowly starting to be okay with some of his moments, and the team up with Lance is kind of nice. But I feel like they have sort of made him be something of a bit of a leader of the newbies, and it makes me wonder if he's going to be in some way involved in sort of taking down Prometheus as some sort of like legacy moment. Like, I don't know, that something felt poignant about that, but it could have just been the way it was shot, or I was overthinking it, or I don't know, felt like they might have been setting up something.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, maybe not the one taking down Prometheus, but maybe he'll have a heroic moment like saving Lance. Seeing as how they're teaming them up together quite a bit, maybe Lance will get into a sticky situation, or Prometheus will be attacking and Wild Dog actually saves him. Maybe it's something like that they're trying to build us up to. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I just sort of was trying to keep my eye on some of the side people in this episode. Which kind of brings me to my next question. With all the collateral damage and missing people, we're seeing sort of an uptick in sort of like deaths and damage and human risk, which is expected leading into the finale. What are you thinking of that? Are you feeling that build towards the finale? Are there certain things, like I'm hoping Thea returns, or you're hoping that there's going to be any sort of final moments, final kill shots, final returns before we get to that finale?
Well, I think you're just bringing up like collateral players or collateral damage even with some of these characters.
Yeah.
I think it's great, because what they're doing is they're building up these side characters just enough to make it meaningful, where we're going, oh no, when something happens to him. Like when you saw Pike get stabbed in the alley, I mean, it was a moment like, no, not Pike. Like, come on, why him? And I just think though that seeing him go down so easily, it definitely takes him out of the running to be vigilante for me, because he didn't quite, his cop smarts weren't really all together there. I mean, this real shady figure who's hiding his face is kind of walking towards you like a zombie, and you're just going to walk right up to him, put your hand on his shoulder. Hey, buddy, are you okay? Like, where's your cop instinct there?
So in a dark alley somewhere.
Yeah. So to me, that really just that completely takes Pike out of the running for being vigilante, because he wouldn't have a dumb moment like that. But back to the positive side of it.
I don't know that anybody would do that, frankly.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's just TV magic and TV blocking again, having to further the plot.
Well, and the fact that he's in the hospital, you know, unconscious now. So it like that, he can't be vigilante. But I'm just saying, though, back to the positive side of those things. We saw enough of Pike. They built him up enough that it still made us go, oh, you know, not Pike. At least it did for me. So I think they're doing that with a lot of these side characters. They're building them up enough and giving them enough depth or enough connection to them that we're going to care a bit about them. And this is where I want to bring up a point here, which I'm probably going to lose a lot of fans on, but let's talk about Susan here, because you even said this episode that you don't care about her. And there was definitely some Facebook posts about it and a few other people saying, I don't care about Susan. Like, what? And it actually is bothering me a little bit, that the flack that she's getting at this point, because, I mean, I know we have not enjoyed her character or her story, the storyline that she's been getting, because of her, we didn't want to trust her. But
it was also just a poorly done storyline.
Yeah, right? And they've kind of changed it a little bit. And she's still a human being, and Oliver obviously cares about her. And she's being used by Chase. She's at the point now where she's being used by Chase in his desire to hurt Oliver. And it wasn't cool to see her put on the line, and we know that he beat her and tortured her or whatever. I mean, you might not feel a lot for Susan as a character, but I think it's a little inhuman of us to not care that she's being hurt.
I felt like it was a questionable choice, actually, to portray her in that light, because at that point, it felt like gratuitous violence. Now, I am not at all against violence on this show, obviously. I'm sitting here saying that the moment Prometheus stabbed his wife was possibly one of the best ones in this episode. But having – they had to be aware at this point that the storyline with Susan was not being well received, quite frankly. They definitely made some missteps and retcons with her character. And having her put in that position where she was subjected to violence, that it's almost like watching violence, you know, when you watch those like procedural dramas like CSI or something, and there's some completely new character who's just there for that one episode who goes through tons of violence or tons of heartbreak. And on one level we care, but on the other level, it's sort of like it's a stranger. That's sort of what it feels like for Susan. And I'm not really a fan of just gratuitous violence against a sort of female character for no reason. Any character, but especially if it's a woman. Because right. At that point, it's not somebody – I know you're saying like she's a human being, which I mean, yes, she's a character, but sure. But it did feel like meaningless violence at that point because we don't care about her character. And so that bothered me about it a little bit. It was like just there without having any emotion to it. It was just there to heighten the story and create violence and create hype, but not towards a character we really know much about or care about. So I don't know. Something about that was a bit off to me. Her storyline has had definitely most of the plot holes and potholes, quite frankly, have all fallen with her storyline. So this episode as well was just another huge misstep, and it wasn't because I wanted to see violence. It was because I didn't want to see violence against her. I didn't want to see her kidnapped. It felt like this unnecessary bloody element of the episode without the emotion there, whereas seeing Prometheus stab his wife, there was emotion there. Like, we cared about that moment. You know, your stomach sinks watching it and you're like, oh my god, this guy is like violent and cruel, he would kill his wife. Like, that's a huge emotional connection to sever to protect his identity, and so that carries meaning. Whereas kidnapping Susan and then sort of like flippantly being like, I don't actually know if Oliver's dating her or not, like, who is she even to you? Because like, nobody really knows. And did they break up, did they not, what's their standing? So it's like he just grabbed somebody vaguely possibly meaningful and Oliver's like, I don't know, something was weird with that.
Yeah, no, I get you there, and I'm going to totally swing it away from this, because you know what I thought was weird about that whole scene? Was what? The fact that the elevator door opens and Oliver just jumps inside. Like, that's another nitpick moment. Like, come on, Oliver, prop the door open, jam it with something. You don't, an elevator clearly opens in front of you. You don't just walk inside. Oh my god, are you okay? Like, that was a pretty dumb move on his part, because... hello, easy trap. Like, that, mm-hmm. He might as well be a rat in a maze. Holy, that was...
You'd think that at this point he would know better. And again, yeah. I understand for plot purposes. Sometimes these things have to happen. But, yeah. I think if this episode had revolved around Thea or William being taken...
Well, there'd be way more emotional connection, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
It would be meaningful seeing them in danger. In this, I think they could have just put any citizen of Star City who we just don't want to die in this danger, and it would have felt the same. If anything, it was like less meaningful than seeing a random citizen of Star City, because at this point, we know who she is. But we have some reasons to trust her and some reasons not to trust her. So it's just sort of like seeing an anti-hero who has some good traits and some bad traits get taken, where we're like, A, you don't know who she is, and B, we don't really know how much we like her. So it's like we're only rooting against the violence and the kidnap. I don't know. It was weird. I wish they had picked somebody else. She could keep dating Oliver. I don't care. But I wish somebody else had been taken by Prometheus.
Okay, well, let me put on this spin for you. What if they're, due to fan reaction or whatever, maybe they're using this as a way to write her out. Maybe after this sequence of events, she is going to be too scared for her life. And she's going to say, you know what, Oliver? I can't handle this. I got to leave. I'm leaving Star City. And away she goes.
I think her I think that was the plan all along. I think she's only supposed to be around for one more episode, possibly two. I know she's out by the end of 519 latest, possibly earlier. So she's just got a couple more.
So there you go.
So I don't think it was writing her out. Like, I think she's filling the full number of scheduled episodes for her. It's just, you know, I mean, even the best writers, and you know, we love the Arrow writers, but even the best writers are going to have some hits and some misses. And it's just unfortunate most of the misses this season have fallen with her character, which is hard for me to say because I'd far prefer to pick on a guy, of course. But the facts are the facts. And this was a bit of a misstep.
But okay, so you can complain.
I will pick
the
on
writers
extra to make up for it.
Well, you can complain the writers may maybe had a misstep with her, but I'd rather them try to write a way out for her, which is what they're doing, than to just have it like no end at all. Like she just disappears we don't have anything. So at least they're trying to figure out a way to get to work through her story. Tie it off, fix it, whatever you want to call it, and I'm okay with it. I'm not, at this point in time, I'm not hating on her as much as everybody else is, and you know, and that's fine.
She's just there. She will pirouette gracefully stage left.
Well, let's please our listeners because most people don't like her, and we've talked about her enough. Let's end this on one positive note because I have to say that when Oliver and Chase finally face off in that building, that was some fantastic street level violent beatdowns between the two of them. It was awesome.
It was great, wasn't it?
I mean, there's that first tackle through the wall when Oliver lands on top of him and he's just rapidly punching him in the gut, and you could hear the like he was punching as hard and fast as he could to try to, you know, get a bit of an advantage. And it was a great fight.
Yeah, I'm always going to have a soft spot for those like street fighting moments where it's hand-to-hand combat and regular weaponry without the additional like superpower aspects. So that's been pretty cool.
Yeah.
So Prometheus is worming his way into my heart based on his like real human status.
Oh, it was choreographed really well, and you could feel the buildup of emotion from this fight. Like Oliver, this has been building up for Oliver, and he is angry for what Prometheus has been doing to him and for what he's reminding him of. And you could feel that emotion in the fight. And you know, Chase has his own well of whatever it is he's feeling, his craziness, his hatred for Oliver and wanting to hurt him. So you could feel these two extremely strong energies, which were like polar opposites, just clashing. That's what made the scene so good, is because you just felt that clash, and it's not over yet. This was just like round one of a possibly three round fisticuffs fight.
Yeah, for sure. It was cool. It definitely, this episode, I mean, it's episode 16. You would hope by this point in the season you'd be engaged in the big overall plot line for the season. So, but this episode and the dynamic developing between our Green Arrow and Prometheus / Prometheus's team / Talia, that face off is making sense in the context of the theme of legacy seasons. I'm into it.
Yeah,
this episode was good.
We might
highest
have
rating so far. Let's see them get up to an 8.
We should have an end of season finale like we got with Slade Wilson. Like, it's building up to a really, really good finish between these two. How they're going to solve this? It's going to be, it's exciting, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, same. You wanna hear what our listeners had to say?
Yeah, let's get to some transmissions from the squad.
Yeah, so I'm gonna start with message that we got from I'm Just Here for Felicity, and she had a lot of questions, which I thought were really interesting. She said, can we talk about Talia being alive and present for a moment? Is this another event due to Flashpoint, or has she always been alive? If it's Flashpoint, does that mean Oliver and Nyssa never got married? If it's not Flashpoint, then where was Talia in season 3 and season 4? Because she kind of finds it hard to believe she'd be okay with what was going on with Malcolm in the League of Assassins. She also said, while she enjoys Talia, she's just not exactly thrilled to see her in the present without context. So she's kind of left with a lot of questions for that. But some of her positives were great scene between Curtis and Felicity in the apartment. And she's with me. She says, I'm actually glad Adrian stabbed his wife, because otherwise that would have been a letdown resolution. And then a couple other questions about Talia. If Talia wants Oliver dead, why not just do it herself? Why involve Adrian? She's just very confused about that and what Adrian's mission is. So I thought that was really interesting, and I'm always here for questions about female villainesses, so I'm curious about Talia as well, as much as Prometheus is redeeming himself. What do you think about some of those questions?
All right, well, I had my own question, because I don't think Flashpoint has anything to do with Talia. I was actually surprised, because I didn't know Talia and Nyssa were sisters. That's part of the DC canon I didn't know about. I was wondering what the family connection was there. I thought, for some reason, and I could be completely off kilter here, thinking that Talia maybe was married to Roz, not being his daughter. I don't know where or why I missed a bit of info along the way there somewhere.
Yeah, Talia in the comics is Roz's daughter.
Okay, see, I don't
know. She's like
know
the more lore. Known one, because the she's involved in the Batman
well,
issues.
I am sorry for not having that knowledge.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Well, I'm apologizing.
The show can
to
obviously
our...
change any of that as well. It's
That's
just
true.
Inspired by the
That's
comics. True. It's not like just retelling word for word the comics, of course.
Well, I'm just apologizing to our listeners, because I should know that kind of stuff. But as for where she was in season 3 and 4, I mean, I think because she, first of all, she was hiding in that monastery way up in the mountains, I'm guessing of China somewhere. And in the present day, she had said something along the lines of finding out that Oliver killed her dad. So I'm just imagining that it took a while for her to find out. She's away at Sanctuary. She's training other people, whatever. It just time passed before it got to her. And obviously she's got a big plan in place. So that takes time to design and execute. That's how I'm going to write off why she hasn't been around yet.
That makes sense.
You know what? I'm sure
they'll have their reasonings or one-liner explanations. So it's okay. It's a TV show.
Yeah. But I think we don't have the answers for her yet, so I can't even answer all of I'm Just Here for Felicity's questions, because I think part of Talia's story is still yet to be told to us, just like we found out a lot about Prometheus this episode, but we also just saw that Talia is deeply connected, so I think that's what we're going to find out.
Flash, does that mean we're going to get a Talia-centric episode? Because if so, sign me up.
Yeah, well, I'd like to hope so. And that's how I'm going to answer that last question. Is I think we don't have all the answers
answer.
For her yet. So it's hopefully it's coming, and we'll be able to answer that a little bit better. And maybe you'll get your answers from the episode.
That sounds good. Me and Talia are going to team up. That's the answer to your question. Mm-hmm. The next transmission that we have is from Scarlet Vixen. And she had a lot of positives about this week's episode. And she gave it an 8.5 out of 10. So here are her positives from the episode. Adrian Chase, she said he's turning into an awesome villain. She was nervous, so was I. But not only on the Prometheus side, but as the DA, he seems to be so far ahead of everything and sort of, you know, wormed his way into Oliver's world. And she loved the talk between Diggle and Oliver. She said it's getting a little repetitive, and she's hoping Oliver gets it through his head, but nonetheless, always great scenes. And she also loved the little chat between Oliver and Felicity. She says, "Be still, my Felicity loving heart." And she said it showed growth between the two characters, acknowledging secrets never work out, a nod to that disastrous storyline in season 4 with Oliver lying. Yes, Scarlet Vixen, we would all like to forget that drama as well. Her cons from this episode, she said she feels like a broken record, but this Susan storyline has got to go. It is horrible, but she's kind of just wanting Prometheus to kill her off, or I suppose, as you've suggested, Flash, Susan can just gracefully exit as well. She's just not at all invested in this character or quote-unquote relationship. The kidnapping had potential to be amazing, but using Susan, it just fell flat.
Well, she agrees with you there.
Yeah, just replace Susan with somebody else in the kidnapping that we care about and say that Susan got a fantastic job in Central City as a reporter working with Iris West and they dated and lived happily ever after. There you go. There's Susan's exit.
Well, see, I agree with you both just on the fact that, like you already brought up, if they had to use someone a little more connected to us, the viewers, and more emotionally meaningful to Oliver, then it would have made this whole kidnapping thing far better. I will agree with you guys on that. I just was saying it just sucks to see Susan being hurt.
Twist if it seemed like he was going to kidnap Susan, but in reality Susan was working with him all along and got him William, Oliver's kid, and it was actually William that was kidnapped, and Susan was actually working with Prometheus. That would have been so much darker and deeper, and you know, jaws on the floor.
That would have definitely given Susan all the deserving hatred that she has, for sure.
Yeah, wow, but I mean, she could have run with that. Like, mm-hmm. It would have been at least a interesting story. You know, like a good storyline does not necessarily mean she would have to be a hero. Like, she could have a good deep villainy role, which would have been better than, you know, the role she's been given so far. And I think she could work with that. Another con that she has, and I think she's agreeing with you here, she said while she's enjoying the Felicity and Helix storyline, she's kind of trying to see endgame as far as the reasoning is involved with getting with this shady looking group. She's this uber intelligent woman who rocks and kicks butt and is the moral compass along with Dig, but sometimes the character veers off course and this is worrying her a bit, so she's worried that it won't pan out very good for Felicity. So I think those were your worries as well. I'm perhaps being a bit too optimistic, but count me down, I'm still a little bit worried about that.
Well, thank you, Scarlet Vixen, and thank you as well, I'm Just Here for Felicity. Those were two excellent emails.
Yeah.
We got one more here from Christy. What did Christy have to say?
Well, Christy echoes what we've heard before and been saying before, that the scenes between Oliver and Chase are now getting so juicy and riveting. She commented about how he joined the show early this season and kind of managed to work his way into every area of Oliver's life, which is interesting.
That he did.
And she says he's now seeming almost as menacing as Slade Wilson. And she pointed out Oliver has killed the fathers of both Talia and Prometheus, giving them something to seek revenge and bond over. Mm-hmm. And with what Prometheus's plans are for Oliver, we don't necessarily know yet, but she points out it must be something big if he's willing to stab his own wife in the stomach. That's one of the most brutal things she said she's seen on Arrow, and I would agree with that. That's right up there with the death of Moira. Obviously, we care about Moira much more than Prometheus's wife, but the emotion involved in that really felt similar, I guess. And then she says she's a little confused by what's happening on the flashbacks with Oliver and Gregor being at odds, and she can't really remember what's all going on there. So maybe you can touch on that a bit. And she was thinking about all of the characters that we've lost: Tommy, Moira, Roy, Sarah, Ray, and Walter. It's a lot of star power. And she says of those who have come after them, one of the only ones living up to that so far is the new Dinah, maybe Ragman. And after watching this episode, she says Prometheus is doing a good job of filling that void. Do you want to touch on her question about the flashback at all?
First, I want to touch on yay for Dinah. I'm glad I'm not the only one on the Dino boat float there. That's awesome. Totally with you, Christy. She's rocking it. Well, I think if we look back at the flashbacks, I'm trying to remember what now was the most recent event was when Oliver dug up all the financial info to find out that he was basically stealing money from the Bratva, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
The details are pretty fuzzy for me as well with the flashbacks.
Well, I think that's what I said. Is the most recent that I can think of is he dug up all that financial info, and then they had to choose, all the Bratva henchmen had to choose which side they were going to, they basically did a vote by choosing which side they're going to be on. And they all went to Gregor's side until Oliver presented the information like, wait a second, he's stealing money from you guys. And then half of them went to Anatoly's side. And that's where the gunfight starts. So, that's one piece of it. I'm trying to remember earlier than that, though. I think because Gregor was always kind of the right-hand man to, I guess, Dolph Lundgren's character, the lead of the Bratva. And I think Gregor never, ever really was accepting of Oliver being there, because he's always been saying, ah, you stupid American, you don't belong here, kind of stuff. So he's never really been ready to accept Oliver being part of the Brotherhood. And I just think it's been like that from the beginning.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that it'll, again, any questions we still have about the flashbacks, I think they're about to be revealed in the next couple episodes. Mm-hmm. I do know there's an episode coming up in a couple weeks, 520, we'll have flashbacks, not all the way back to before season one, but they will be flashbacks that take place between season four and season five.
Oh, that's interesting.
Still will involve Russia, I think.
Okay, well, that makes sense, because there was a few scenes when Oliver did go to the Bratva. Remember, he tried ordering them around, saying, you must do this for me. So, yeah, we never really saw a lot of connection to that. So, cool.
Yeah. We're going to get a little bit of that, which I think would be pretty interesting.
That makes sense. Well, thank you, Christy, for that email. I think we have one last piece of feedback here. It's a voicemail from Green Butterfly.
Yeah.
Here she is.
Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Oh my god, Felicity is stressing me out. I mean, I'm really happy she was able to get all this access to information to help save John and found Susan. But seriously, but if she keeps using Helix, the stakes are just going to keep rising till she's so deep in trouble that she can't get out. I really appreciated what Diggle said to Oliver to encourage him after he tore up the Arrow Cave. However, William was mentioned, which makes me worry that that poor little boy is going to get pulled into this dangerous situation.
Yeah.
We need Nyssa. Has anyone seen Nyssa? I feel like we really need an all-ghoul versus all-ghoul situation. So, happy Superhero Friday, everyone. But I hope no one has any plans, because this is seriously an all-hands-on-deck situation. The mayor is missing! I repeat, the mayor is missing! And there's a psychopathic killer masquerading as a grieving DA. I gotta fly. All hands on deck. The mayor is missing. The city is in trouble. Green Butterfly out.
Yes, it is trouble. Or in trouble for sure.
Wow. Love hearing the feedback from Green Butterfly. Always a highlight.
She's got a good point, though, about Oliver's son, possibly. I wonder if they're going to bring him back. You know, I mean, that was a big name drop.
I think they will. They have to, right?
Yeah. So is Prometheus going to go after him next and hold him hostage? Then we're going to get that deep, oh my god, dramatic connection that you've been looking for this episode.
Right.
Yeah. Whew. That's all we got, I think, isn't it, for our transmissions?
I think so. We are left with pretty high stakes going into 517.
We are. But thank you, everybody, for all that awesome feedback. And what's the title of our next episode is? Did you catch that?
I believe it is, and I'm going to probably pronounce this incorrectly, Capuchon.
Right. That's why I asked you to say it, because I didn't know how to say it.
You guys can all go to my Twitter and give me a pronunciation guide and tell me how I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Capuchin. Who knows? I don't even know what language that's supposed to be. I'm not sure what it's supposed to be. We'll have to do a Google word search on that one and see what it is.
Yeah.
What awesome, Cammy.
See what the context is.
Exactly. Well, that was a pretty heavy episode to get this week. I think it's really building up to an ending that we have been wanting for the last two seasons. I'm really, really looking forward to it. Arrow has found its groove, and the last few episodes have just been a really nice, smooth ride and giving me that grounded Arrow is back kind of feel. So I'm quite enjoying this season.
I'm looking forward to the next episode as well.
Cool.
We will see you guys next week, won't we?
We'll totally see you guys next week. And, you know, if you want to be part of the show, just go to arrowsquad.com and all the connections and everything there, the info you need to get in touch with us is there. If you want to find me and talk other stuff other than Arrow, come find me over at Tomorrow's Legends. We're talking about that other wonderful show, Legends of Tomorrow, and we have a lot of fun over there, so come find me there.
I hear good things about Legends this season.
Yes, lots of fun, yes. Lots of fun.
And if you'd like to talk with me about all things Arrow and maybe a few other TV shows, fun stuff, you can find me at Cammy and Ray on Twitter or, you know, Facebook, Snapchat, whatever sites the kids are using these days. I'm probably using them too.
Well, I'll just make a quick point. Like, a lot of people from Arrow were huge fans of Sarah Lance, so if you haven't come check her out on Legends, she's kicking butt, so get over there and watch her as the White Canary, because she's awesome.
I'm always here for more female heroines saving the world, establishing a matriarchy, letting Wonder Woman rule us all.
Cool. Well, until that happens, Flash is going to be here saving the day. And for now, Flash is out of here. See you next week, guys.
And I'm Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media at goldenspiralmedia.com.